It turns out that March Madness is not limited to exclusively college basketball, because what the Kansas City Chiefs have done so far in free agency, while maybe not mad, has certainly been unpredictable and surprising, and now I get to talk about that to you on this show called Roughing the Kicker. I am your host, Joshua Briscoe. I'm on Twitter at JBBriscoe. I am here to talk about everything from Mitchell Schwartz to Jeff Allen to Sean Smith to the linebackers to the Chiefs losing draft picks over tampering charges and everything surrounding that currently. So much going on not only in Kansas City, but in the rest of the AFC West. The Denver Broncos have lost two quarterbacks since they won the Super Bowl. The Oakland Raiders are getting much, much stronger, and the balance of power appears to be shifting in the Chiefs division here. Plus, stuff that flew under the radar, like the future of Ben Grubbs. He's not even a Chief anymore, and I think there's a good chance you didn't even know that until just now. So we're going to get into that and so much more here on this episode of Roughing the Kicker, packed to the brim, because it is, in fact, March Madness all across the sports universe. I'm super tempted to go at this chronologically and look at the order the Chiefs did this in, because I think it's so interesting, and I feel very differently about the Chiefs' free agency right now compared to how I did as it was actually happening. But let's go and look at it as a whole body of work first. I'll try to come back to where I felt at different points. Let's start, though, with the good news first. And Mitchell Schwartz and what the offensive line is shaping up to look like for the Chiefs. The Chiefs finalized a five-year deal with former Browns offensive tackle Mitchell Schwartz. And one of the first things I learned about Mitch Schwartz was from at NFL Draft Scout on Twitter. Said Mitch Schwartz was one of the only people to lock up Von Miller last season. Now he gets to face him twice. I can't possibly say that that was a definite, concrete reason why the Chiefs went and got him, because the Chiefs had other offensive line issues, and this is a huge step into fixing those, regardless of how he was up against Von Miller. But if that doesn't make you just a little bit excited to see what that matchup looks like, I can't help you. I've been on the Eric Fisher bandwagon more or less since his rookie season, but to varying degrees. And last year, last offseason, I put all my chips in the middle on Eric Fisher, and he was injured at the beginning of the year. It started to look pretty grim. But once he moved back to left tackle, the offensive line improved, he improved, the team improved. And then in the playoffs, he beat up a beat-up J.J. Watt. But again, J.J. Watt, as I said after the playoff game, J.J. Watt had been beaten up like that all year physically, and he was still unstoppable. The week before, he was equally beaten up and was unstoppable. Eric Fisher handled his business. I've been all in on Eric Fisher for a while. Last year, I finally got to cash in on that investment a little bit. So I believe in Eric Fisher locking down that left side. I think he should and will get an extension soon. Not enormous money. Probably money very close to what Mitchell Schwartz just got, which is right tackle money. But Fisher getting that on the left side would be totally reasonable to me. Lock him down on the left, Schwartz on the right. You have two tackles that you believe in. I don't know when exactly I could point to saying, hey, this is the last time the Chiefs had two offensive tackles that I really believed in. And so the Chiefs are going to have that going forward now, which is, not that you need me to say this, a huge step forward for this offense, because the line is so important, those edges are so important, especially for Alex Smith. So they bring in Mitchell Schwartz, and from Aaron Wilson on Twitter, Mitchell Schwartz Chiefs deal, $33 million, $15 million guaranteed, $7 million signing bonus. His salary this year is $750,000. Keep that in mind, because that's how the Chiefs are doing this. This is how the cap in the NFL works now. You sign a guy to a big deal, give him a little bit of money this first year, and then bigger money later on. So his salary, again, $7 million signing bonus, $15 guaranteed, but his salary this year, $750,000, then just under $5 million next year, $5.7 million the year after that, then $6 million, and then $6 million again. He probably won't see those last 2 years of the deal as it's currently constructed, I would guess. Perhaps he'll still be around for that second to last year. That last year, with none of it guaranteed, means nothing, which, by the way, comes up again later on with something the Broncos just did on a very strange contract by a guy who refused to hire an agent, so that makes sense. We'll get to Russell Okung later. Again, Aaron Wilson, Mitchell Schwartz base salary is fully guaranteed in 2016, 2017, and 2018. Guaranteed for injury at signing, full guarantee if he's on roster. The roster the third day of the 2018 league year. So he's on the team through 2018. And then what happens after that, up in the air. I can't find anything with this signing that I don't like. Pro Football Focus had him graded as the second highest right tackle all of 2015. Again, putting him on the opposite side of Eric Fisher, locking down those edges, is so important, especially whenever you're talking about a division with Khalil Mack and Von Miller bringing pressure every single down. So now let's look at how the offensive line shapes up. Well, Jeff Allen is now a member of the Houston Texans. He got 4 years, $28 million, $14 million in the first year, which is, again, interesting just to see how the Texans are moving their cap around, paying that early. So Mitch Morse is at center, obviously. He had a very nice rookie season, as long as he can stay healthy. And when he's not healthy, Zach Fulton is a top-level backup center. He could probably start at center for a lot of NFL teams. And I love Zach Fulton. If you've listened to this show last year, you know I love Zach Fulton. So you've got those guys on the edges, Mitch Morse at center, the guards, Jeff Allen moves. And then there was some talk over this offseason saying, hey, you know, maybe Ben Grubbs was not good at the beginning of last year, and then he got injured. Maybe he comes back. Well, here's a Pro Football Talk article snippet here. Quote, just a year after trading for Ben Grubbs and giving him a new four-year deal, the Kansas City Chiefs are parting ways with a veteran guard. According to Howard Balzer of Sports Exchange, the Chiefs released Grubbs on Wednesday with a failed physical designation. So Grubbs is no longer on the team. I still don't fault the Chiefs, because I would be a hypocrite too. I don't fault the Chiefs for giving up that fifth-round pick to bring him in, and even I have a hard time faulting them for trying to restructure his deal, because at the time we said, oh look, it's a veteran guard, this team needs guards, a fifth-round pick, what kind of rookie are you going to get with a fifth-round pick? Well, maybe Zach Fulton with a sixth-round pick, and I love Zach Fulton. But I liked the move then, and it didn't work out. I have a hard time being overly aggressive here, because it would make me a hypocrite to do so. Should the Chiefs have a better idea of what's going to work out than me? 100% absolutely. I'm a talking head on a podcast. They're being paid very, very well to build a winning franchise. So I think that gives me space to be critical. It gives all fans space to be critical. But I think we also have to watch ourselves, because we also see ourselves as experts, at least I do, in a way. And we all liked that move well enough. It was a gamble on a veteran guard who was on the downside of his career. The Chiefs lost on it. It's where we are now. And I really, really wanted the Chiefs to keep Jeff Allen. I think he was a very valuable part of this offensive line, not just because of his talent, but because of what he did for Eric Fisher, what he did for the entire attitude of that offensive line. But again, if you listen to those numbers, 4 years, $28 million, and Mitchell Schwartz, you can say, you can cut his down to, 3 years, $33 million. And if those numbers really do match up that well, you want to pay the right tackle. And also, the Chiefs have some guard depth, even though it's kind of easy to forget about it. Here's why. Mitch Morse will not, according to John Dorsey, and absolutely should not move to either guard spot. He could, in a pinch, if the Chiefs got really thin at guard and they wanted to move him to a guard spot and put Fulton at center, I would understand. But Mitch Morse is the center of this team. I think it could be for a long time. Mitch Morse is the center. Don't move him. So this leaves my man Zach Fulton, this leaves Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, this leaves Ja Reed, and the forgotten Paul Fanica to battle for those last two guard spots, plus whoever else they bring in. So Reed played very well at guard at the very end of the year. It was surprising to me to see him get the start at a guard spot. I think Donald Stevenson was back at tackle for that game. But he played very well there. We don't really know about Fanica. Jerrod Pugsley is also on the roster. I think we can see another... Think of how Mitch Morse fits into this team. I think we could see another late-round, versatile offensive lineman who could bounce around and fill out the roster like that. But Zach Fulton can play guard or center. Reed can play guard or tackle. So I think we could see the Chiefs roll with Fisher, Schwartz, and Morse as their three lockdown guys, edges and center. And then Reed, Fulton, LDT, and Fanica as their roster depth. I think that's far from cemented. But at this point, if I had to pencil guys in, I'd like to see Fulton and Ja Reed at left and right guard. But the Chiefs seem to really like LDT, and Fanica is currently still under contract, so I think they'll have a really nice battle there for guards. And if any of those guys start to really fall apart during the year, you have a guy behind them who you say, this guy can jump in and help. And then if either tackle goes down, you trust Ja Reed as your third guy swing tackle. If Morse goes down, you've got Fulton. So I actually think the Chiefs have built a pretty nice offensive line here, which is really remarkable considering how far away from a competent offensive line it was 2 years ago, 1 year ago, and even halfway through last year. Another name missing from that list, though, is Donald Stevenson. He got 3 years and $14 million with $10 million guaranteed from the Denver Broncos. Of everything that happened in free agency, in my opinion, this was the easiest Chiefs free agency prediction on earth. He never fit Andy Reid's system, but he had the size and the skill set to get paid elsewhere where he fit better. I think Donald Stevenson is an okay NFL tackle. I think he's an okay third tackle, swing tackle kind of guy. But he never fit with what Andy Reid wanted to do. Nothing wrong with that. He's getting paid now in Denver, which kind of stinks just because I don't like seeing guys travel within divisions. I don't know why, though. It's not like watching Jamal Charles get picked up by a division rival. It's Donald Stevenson, so I'll get over it. But he goes to Denver and gets paid. And now we have an idea of what the Chiefs' offensive line looks like going forward. Now let's move on to something apart from players who were brought in this year. The Kansas City Chiefs were penalized a third-round draft pick this season and a sixth-round pick for next year's draft for a premature contract agreement that they had with Jeremy Maclin last year, commonly known as tampering. Andy Reid, John Dorsey, and the Chiefs were all fined for this as well. Just some comments before I get to mine from other people who know more than me. Aaron Wilson, the tampering penalties for the Chiefs is kind of nonsense considering the majority of the league started talking deals back at the Combine. Dan Pompey, the NFL is making examples of Andy Reid, John Dorsey, and the Chiefs, but everybody in the NFL knows that every team tampers with potential free agents. Pro Football Talk had an entire article detailing some things that Brock Osweiler had said about agreeing to terms with the Houston Texans. Spoiler alert, in case you missed that, that'll come up later. Again, no longer with the Broncos, same with the Houston Texans, you know that already. That he had agreements with the Texans before they should have been having an agreement. And they said, and the article from Pro Football Talk says, the goal here isn't to get the Texans in trouble. The goal is to expose the inconsistency in the application of the rules, along with all the hyper-technical folly of allowing agents to talk to teams during legal tampering periods, but not allowing players to talk to teams. And so that's the difference here that got the Chiefs in trouble. Reportedly, the Chiefs came in contact with Jeremy Maclin directly during this kind of legal tampering period the NFL has allowed. A few years ago, this idea of legal tampering period is fairly new. It was a few years ago, I believe, that it was first kicked into play. But so what the team could be doing then, the Chiefs could have talked, and I'm sure did talk, to Jeremy Maclin's agent in that time period. Whereas previously they wouldn't have been allowed to under the old rules, but they could have talked to Jeremy Maclin's agent, but they were stomped on here with a third round pick, a sixth round pick, and the fine for talking to Maclin directly. That's the difference here. Cypher, ESPN on Twitter: the Chiefs got drilled by the NFL on the tampering charge, largest ever discipline. They're angry and have a point. The Chiefs are appealing here. We have to hear about it before the draft comes around. A third round pick is a big deal. You can say, you know, Travis Kelce was a third-round pick, and you can also say Niall Davis was a third-round pick, and you can say I think it was Turk McBride was a third-round pick. If not, it was Tank Johnson, and I get those two confused all the time. Third-round picks are important. The sixth-round pick is a slap on the wrist. Fines are nothing in the NFL. But, Philip Gaines was a third-round pick. There are impactful players as rookies, and especially down the road, that develop, that started as a third-round draft pick. So I'm going to go ahead and let that point die now, that the third-round pick is important and worth fighting for. The thing here that is frustrating to me is what a couple of those people had pointed out, those writers pointed out. The NFL is so inconsistent with how these things are handled. And so I'm assuming if you're listening right now, you've listened to the show enough in the past to have a feel for who I am and what I talk about and how I talk about things. I'm a Chiefs fan. I've been a Chiefs fan my entire life. I'm 21 now. And I've been a Chiefs fan for as long as I could be really invested in the team. And in that, I also now try to be an analyst of the team. I try to learn as much as I can, talk about things as smartly as I can, try to bring in a lot of different perspectives. That's my goal here, is to say, hi, I'm a Chiefs fan, and you're a Chiefs fan. Let's talk about this smartly. You're not going to hear me after the draft gush and gush and gush after a seventh round pick whose name I did not know before the draft, and I'm gonna say this is why John Dorsey's so great. This is why we're turning the world around right now, because we don't know that. And I think I try my best to not overpraise things the Chiefs do. I'll talk about Tom Bahali a little bit. I'm not going to be afraid to be critical of the mistakes I think the Chiefs made. On the other hand, I will not hold myself back from praising the Chiefs when I think they deserve it. I like what they did with Mitchell Schwartz a lot. I like how they've built this offensive line. I will defend draft picks by my own accord. I defended Eric Fisher for longer than most people. I have a glimmer of hope for Dee Ford longer than most people. But once again, I will be happily critical of other things the Chiefs do. I was very critical of Bob Sutton in the playoffs, and I'm very critical of Andy Reid's time management. All of that to say, I'm a Chiefs fan. You're a Chiefs fan listening to this right now. But I try to do my best to be objective about it. I won't try to mute my fandom, and I also won't try to overcompensate the other way by being too critical. All of that to be a precursor to, I think the Chiefs got screwed here. I think the NFL did what the NFL does. The Patriots have been on the receiving end of this kind of stuff more often than anybody. Deflategate was completely over-investigated, completely over-punished, but it was using the Patriots, and the NFL loves to do this for some reason. I mean, I guess it goes back to Spygate, but that still kind of baffles me sometimes. The NFL used the Patriots as an example to say, don't screw with us, we're the NFL, we will take your first-round draft pick away. Spygate started all of this, but again, the point there was to make the Patriots an example. Don't try to get around this. Now, on the other hand, sometimes things slide so far under the radar that I don't understand. Little things like, I don't know, HGH allegations, and I'm not bitter about Peyton Manning or anything. I'm totally over it. But little things sometimes will slide under the radar, but on other occasions, especially with established franchises, it seems to me, I don't feel like I've ever, and please tweet me if I'm missing something here, but I don't think I can think of a time when a team like the Jaguars or the Lions have been really strongly punished because they're kind of a lame franchise. Not in like oh that's lame, but like a limping franchise. And the Chiefs have front office respect, they have head coaching respect, they have owner respect around the league. So if the NFL can say, look at how strong we are, we're standing up to this organization and we're making an example out of them to show that you better not be talking to players in that tampering period, the NFL took that opportunity. And I think it's absurd because the precedent is not there at all. Unless by precedent you're referring to the fact that the NFL makes decisions like this all the time to make examples out of singular scenarios. Like this kind of punishment that the Chiefs got here is a second offense type of punishment, in my opinion. And there has been no report of this happening previously with the Chiefs, with John Dorsey, Andy Reid, any of those, or Jeremy Maclin. None of those things have been reported at all. But if that was the case, this would make more sense. First time around, you say, hey, you talked to a player too soon. We're taking a fifth-round pick, and we're fining you as an organization $250,000. You broke the rule. And then the next time, you say, all right, now it's a third-round pick and $500,000. You broke the rule. And then the next time, it's saying, we're taking a first-round pick because this is the third time you've done this. And that's generally how things work in the NFL, I think. You have an offense and you constantly escalate that as you continue to break the rule more and more often. You can see that's why the Patriots are so closely watched. But this Chiefs punishment as a first offense, I'm glad the Chiefs are appealing it. I think they have a strong case here, but knowing the NFL, taking this opportunity to make an example of a strong franchise and of a strong ownership group, I don't love their chances. As I've said for a couple of weeks in a row now, I think the Chiefs made one sizable mistake so far this offseason, or at least made one move that I would have certainly taken a different direction, and that was franchise tagging Eric Berry, who, by the way, no even new rumors about a long-term deal coming there. But franchising Eric Berry and letting Sean Smith walk. Well, the Chiefs are reportedly interested and involved in the Sean Smith contract bidding war for longer than I was expecting them to be, because it's pretty much down to the wire from the reports that I heard. But ultimately, it didn't last. Cornerback Sean Smith and the Raiders agreed to a 4-year, $40 million deal, as Ian Rappaport reported. Terrez Paylor said, at the end of the day, the Chiefs weren't close to matching the Raiders' offer, a source tells me. And now this really puts the Chiefs in a bad spot, I think, for corners. A spot that we expected them to be in, and a spot that the Chiefs were expecting themselves to be in. We all saw this coming. But this is now the biggest question for this entire roster, I think, is who is that number two corner? Can Philip Gaines step up? If he does, if he steps over and is healthy and plays well on the outside, which is a lot of ifs for a guy in his going to be in his second full year because he missed basically all of last season. A lot of ifs there. Then can Steven Nelson play the slot? What if any of those guys get hurt? What if Marcus Peters isn't ready to be by far the best corner on the field? That concerns me, but something that gives me some hope here is it seems like the Chiefs realize that that's a problem and will do their best to try to remedy that because they were bidding for Sean Smith for so long. If the Chiefs were totally comfortable with a Peters, Gaines, Nelson trio and you just bring in some depth guys to keep the rotation healthy and to have some other options, they wouldn't have been trying to bring back Sean Smith for, say, maybe $8 million a year, which sounds like it could be a plausible number. I still would have franchised Sean Smith. And if you want to hear more about that, you can go to some past episodes. I'll save you from rehashing that too much right now. But I would have franchised Sean Smith, locked down the other side for one more year, give Marcus Peters one more year to develop, give Phillip Gaines one more year to develop, give yourself a chance to bring in another corner. A lot of flexibility would have come with giving Sean Smith the franchise tag. The Chiefs gave it to Eric Berry instead. Again, a move that I think Eric Berry is not worth that money, because what he does well, you can get more cheaply elsewhere. But I digress for now. Prince and Mukamara, just for a reference point, got a one-year, $5.5 million deal. Arrowhead Pride pointed out the Chiefs wouldn't pay $10 million per year to a corner that they know and like, being Sean Smith, so they're not going to spend big on somebody else. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I still would have tagged Sean Smith. We're not going to see the Chiefs go into big bidding on any corners. For the most part, they're off the radar now anyway. I said, I think this was like the day after the Chiefs were eliminated from the playoffs on 8-10. I said that I thought the Chiefs would be looking at, or should be looking at, a corner once again in the first round here. It seems like the system can accept a rookie very quickly, even though I think Marcus Peters is going to be an anomaly for how young corners adapt to this system. But if by any means you can use Peters as a reference point, this organization should know what they're looking for in corners. John Dorsey seems to have more or less a type, and the Chiefs need to continue to build that young secondary, because I don't think Phillip Gaines and Steven Nelson are ready to be the outside and slot guys, respectively, and really take that secondary to the next level. It worries me too much. I think that there's got to be something more you can trust in there. The problem with not franchising Sean Smith is even the safer option, or the higher investment option, would be a late first round pick and a rookie. Marcus Peters didn't start out flawlessly here, and he ended up obviously being Defensive Rookie of the Year, but he didn't start out completely smoothly, and I don't think he would have had much of a season at all if he would have been by far, if he would have been the only top-tier corner on this team. Having Sean Smith opposite of him helped him a lot. He got targeted a lot and challenged a lot, and he continually met up to that. But he got challenged so much because teams respect Sean Smith. So that's the one piece of this roster now that I'm going to be most curious to see where the Chiefs end up going to fix it, because that is right now, that's my biggest concern. The biggest surprise, however, of how this free agency has gone, in my opinion, is Jay Howard and the fact that he's still a Chief. Aaron Wilson first tweeted the Jay Howard deal, $10 million, $8.26 million guaranteed, $5 million in bonus, salaries is $760,000 guaranteed this year, $3.7 million guaranteed for injury at signing, and up the $2 million Pro Bowl escalator. A lot of numbers there. You can kind of boil it down to 2 years, $10 million, which is a remarkable deal for a guy that I thought was going to demand more per year. I thought it would demand more years. Arrowhead Pride pointed out that it seems like the way Jay Howard was talking, he seemed to be hoping to get another deal done before his 2 years are up, something to remember next offseason. I think this makes a lot of sense for both sides if that's what he's looking for, although I still think Jay Howard could have gotten a lot more money elsewhere. It's going to be hard to pay both Jay Howard and Dontari Poe, so I'm thinking at this point perhaps the Chiefs feel that they could keep both this year, then let Poe walk, and then extend Jay Howard next season for even a more long-term deal. Plus, you get another year to see Jay Howard prove himself. This is a great deal for the Chiefs. For Jay Howard, it's sort of surprising, but I'm very glad that he's here, and I hope this serves him well. Next, Tom Bahali. Tom Bahali gets a 3-year, $21 million deal with the Chiefs, including $11.5 million fully guaranteed, $1.5 million for roster bonuses, $1.5 million for making weight, which is very interesting. Before this, though, Holly's contract needed... It's so hard to explain this in a bite-sized piece, especially in audio form. But there were $4 million of his past contract that were essentially, that were parsed out to dummy years, more or less, in his contract, that would have been, from my understanding here, $1 million this year, the next year, the next year, and the next year, just spreading out a $1 million per year kind of bonus sort of thing for Tom Bahali's contract. Well, the Chiefs didn't get this new deal worked out in time to kind of include that in the discussions, I suppose. So the phrase that's been used around this a ton has been that $4 million got voided, or the contract got voided, and now the $4 million all drops on the Chiefs cap this year. Now, that is sloppy to me. I would think that the Chiefs would love to have been able to just drop a million over 4 years as opposed to taking four extra million this year, plus his current contract, which I'll get back to in a second. But it's not that those $4 million went from $0 to $4 million. It's that it went from $1 million the next 4 years to $4 million this year, to the best of my understanding. So it's not ideal, and I would be surprised if that was calculated, if that's what the Chiefs actually wanted to do. But it's not as catastrophic as it seemed at first, at least by my understanding. The actual deal itself really surprises me here. Because $11.5 million for a guy that had trouble staying healthy last year surprised me a lot. He looked pretty good when he was playing, and I'm give him every Friday practice off for the rest of his career, legitimately. That was a fantastic move, and we'll talk about Derek Johnson in a second, another old linebacker. But giving him almost $12 million fully guaranteed, even with having roster bonuses and weight bonuses here, seems like a lot of commitment to a guy who you don't actually expect to be here that long. Now, if you want to say it becomes a 2-year deal and you probably get to just take some dead weight in that third year, if he's not living up to it, you get him to retire or whatever, that's fair. But according to SpotTrack here, he's got $1 million base salary this year, 5.75 in 2017 and in 2018, with again these bonuses and stuff. The cap hit next year is $8.5 million and it's going to be here because to cut him would bring almost $9 million in dead cap. The third year, his cap number is $8.5 million in 2018. $8.5 million, almost 8.6, it will be his cap hit, and it would cost about 1.6 to release him and just carry that dead money with you. I think that's what we're going to see actually happen here. But even then, we're talking about a $3.8 million cap hit this year for Tom Bahali, essentially plus the $4 million that all showed up this year. So almost an $8 million cap hit this year and about $8.6 million next year, plus the bonuses, however those fall. It's a lot of money for an aging pass rusher. And also, the first reaction for a lot of people, especially on Twitter, was talking about Tom Bahali in relation to Dee Ford. I think this shows trust issues in Dee Ford, but I don't think it's the end of his career. It might be the end of his time in Kansas City after his contract comes up. But when you take a team with three established pass rushers, especially playing in a rotation like the Chiefs did towards the end of last season, that is incredibly valuable. However, one of the reasons they had to rotate is because Tamba is old, and again, they just gave him 2 definite years, possibly 3 years, with a lot of guaranteed money sitting there, especially counting the $4 million that's already there this year that was spread out. So I think this is going to be a nice rotation of Ford, Holly, Houston, and as long as two of those guys are healthy, the defense will be good. But I think it's extremely, just as I'm saying with Eric Berry, I think it's extremely fair to ask yourself, not, you know, are Eric Berry and Tom Bahali good football players? Because they are still. But is that a good use of the cap space that you have? And I'm hard-pressed to argue that it is right now. If you could, it could have let Tom Bahali walk. And I love Tom. Every Chiefs fan loves Tom. Every Chiefs fan loves Eric Berry. So I'm gonna say that, and we're going to move on from it. If you let Tom Bahali walk, from a business perspective, maybe you're able to keep Sean Smith, if not long-term, for just this year. Or maybe you get the long-term deal done with Eric Berry and you franchise Sean Smith this year. Again, I never would have franchised Eric Berry, and I would have probably kept Holly and Sean Smith. But for me, if I was going to put together a list of the hardest to replace positions for the Chiefs free agency, I think I would have had Tom Bahali as the second pass rusher, as second to easiest to replace, ahead of Eric Berry, given the money and given what Berry does so well. So I might be delusional in underrating both of them, but the money that both of those guys get here seems to be over the Chiefs' head in my mind. Let's go ahead and go to something that I can be positive about again. The Chiefs retain inside linebacker Derek Johnson on a 3-year, $21 million deal. This from Pro Football Focus. Quote, he may be 33 years old and a year removed from an Achilles injury, but Derek Johnson hasn't lost a step. He was still a top 10 graded linebacker in 2015. He has been for a majority of his career. The Chiefs had no semblance of a replacement for Johnson's production, and his impact versus both the run and pass is a steal for what they're paying him. I read that because I would have a hard time summarizing it in a paragraph better than that. I think this makes all the sense in the world. And again, by the end of this 3 years, we're looking at Derek Johnson going, boy, he has lost a step now. I think we should be expecting that to happen. That's just the aging process in the NFL. But the numbers here make sense. Both of these guys, DJ and Tamba Hali, get 3 years, $21 million. But I think Tamba, especially trying to hit that edge all the time, I feel like he's got a shorter shelf life left, easy for me to say, than Derek Johnson does. Now to some other Chiefs that are or are not on the team currently. The Chiefs let safety Tyvon Branch go. We expected that whenever they franchise tagged Eric Berry, which is disappointing to me because I think he brought a nice and cheap, a salary cap friendly package of skills to the team. He goes to the Cardinals for 2 years, $10 million maximum, $5 million guaranteed, 1 year, $5 million with a team option for a second year for $5 million, essentially. I would have been happy to see him come back. Doesn't surprise me that he's gone. The Chiefs signed wide receiver Rod Streeter, an ex-Raider, in a one-year deal, which is packed with incentives. It can ultimately be worth up to about $5 million, but it's a $760,000 salary with a $100,000 fully guaranteed. So it's not a big investment, although it's a high ceiling as far as what the contract number could be. Rod Streeter himself, he hasn't done anything in a couple of years, so I am keeping my expectations limited, I suppose. But he talked about his biggest strength here. And he said, quote, "My biggest strength is that I'm 6'3 and can play in the slot. I feel like I can go against the nickel and I'll ultimately win." I think that is interesting because I do not see Rod Streeter coming in at 6'3 and being able to go opposite of Jeremy Maclin and provide that outside threat that we're looking for. That's got to be Chris Conley this year. No one else is going to come in with a higher expectation than Chris Conley, not even if they drafted a receiver in the first round, which I don't think is happening. Regardless, though, Rod Streeter might be able to be – This is discounting DeAnthony Thomas. But since DeAnthony Thomas was no longer with the team last year, there was not a lot in the slot other than Albert Wilson. Jason Avant became relevant again in the playoffs. I don't expect to see him come back. So Streeter and Wilson can provide a little bit of depth for each other there and a little bit of competition for each other in the slot. Streeter might be able to do something interesting there if he can stay healthy. DeAnthony Thomas, same goes for him. The Chiefs are re-signing linebacker and special teamer Frank Zombo. 3 years, $3.6 million deal with some incentives. Makes sense. For what he does on special teams, it's worth it. And he's quality depth with the linebackers. It's fine. Same goes for Jamel Fleming getting re-signed. Important special teamer and some depth in the secondary. We don't want to ever see him go head-to-head with Peyton Manning or any good quarterback as a corner, but as depth and a special teamer, fine by me. I'm not going to grade free agency before we see any of these guys play in this next year. I'm not going to grade the draft either, but I do want to sort of just look. I want to zoom out a little bit, talk about all these things individually. I want to zoom out and talk about this free agency period as a whole. Mitchell Schwartz makes all the sense in the world, locked on that outside, thrilled about it. Losing Jeff Allen bums me out, but it makes sense because of what they brought in, which was Mitch Schwartz. Ben Grubbs going, surprising and disappointing for what they paid for him, but as a football move, makes enough sense. Disappointing, though, from a cap and a draft pick position. Donald Stevenson walking. Easy to predict. The draft pick thing isn't really about free agency this year, but last year, which affects the draft this year. And also, that punishment was announced. I don't think I mentioned this earlier. It was announced after that period happened this year. So it didn't affect anything this season, which is very strange. Losing Sean Smith, huge. And I loathe it because I also dislike franchising Eric Berry. Those two things, for me, are the antithesis of each other. If you reverse how those two guys were dealt with, I would be head over heels for how this team was building up. Jay Howard, fantastic. Tamba Hali, very reserved, but hopeful. Derek Johnson makes all the sense in the world. And then guys like Tyvon Branch, the second tier of guys not worried about. But overall, those are kind of the bite-sized pieces of how I feel about this. And overall, I feel like the Chiefs had a good free agency period. They have to address the corner issue, which is very hard to do with a rookie at the back end of the first round. And I don't see any big trades happening. That's the concern for me now. The fact that that's really the only concern for how this team is building right now, I'm very happy about. You're counting on guys like Chris Conley developing. You're counting on Philip Gaines developing. And you're counting on the coaching being able to pull all these pieces together. But boy, right now, I feel like the Chiefs are playing with a pretty full hand of cards here. It's just a matter of making sure that the secondary holds it together, which has been a problem in the past. But, segue, it won't be a problem with Peyton Manning throwing the ball anymore because he has retired. And it won't even be a problem with Brock Osweiler because the Texans gave Brock Osweiler a 4-year, $72 million contract. Let's talk about the Broncos. This is from Brandon Kiley on Twitter. Highly paid quarterbacks with a lower average salary than Brock Osweiler, Matt Stafford, Alex Smith, Andy Dalton, Sam Bradford, Carson Palmer. Alex Smith is on a four-year, $68 million deal, which seems better and better every time a quarterback gets a new contract. Adam Schefter says Osweiler essentially is getting $37 million guaranteed. So now here's what happens with the Broncos so far this offseason. The Broncos lose Osweiler and Manning. They traded for former Eagles and Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez. The Broncos give the Eagles a conditional 7th-round pick in 2017 for that, which is nothing. Lots of reports have had the Broncos interested in Colin Kaepernick, but so far nothing substantial has happened there, which is hilarious. Adam Schefter says the Broncos will bring in more quarterback options. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick would make all the sense in the world for the Broncos, but Schefter said that Fitzpatrick and the Broncos talked, but the Broncos didn't want to spend that much on a quarterback, and they may revisit it later, and I hope they don't, because he's a more capable quarterback and a better fit than Colin Kaepernick or Mark Sanchez, in my mind. Ryan Fitzpatrick had a nice season last year. He had a better year than Brock Osweiler or Peyton Manning did. If you put him on that team last year, maybe you're talking about the only loss that changes being the Broncos in playing New England in Denver in the playoffs. But even then, Ryan Fitzpatrick beat the Patriots last year, and that was a fantastic defense. And the defense is losing pieces also. Besides being forced to franchise Von Miller, who's going to make an incredible amount of money, they lost Malik Jackson to the Jaguars. The Broncos, on a positive note for Denver, they just signed offensive tackle Russell Okung to a 5-year, $53 million deal with $0 guaranteed to start with. It can become guaranteed money after this year from what's developing there. So that's a positive. It gives the chance the Broncos to either trade or release tackle Ryan Clady, which many people seem to be expecting, which surprised me to hear. Also, they had to meet an offer sheet from Miami to keep running back C.J. Anderson, spending more money on him than they wanted to. The Broncos are in a weird place right now. It is an unprecedented amount of change for a team that just won the Super Bowl. Losing defensive players, losing two quarterbacks. We're looking at this team going from Peyton Manning to Mark Sanchez, although the Peyton Manning we saw was basically Mark Sanchez, just in a number 18 jersey. But they just won the Super Bowl, and now they're having significant changes. So as if this offseason wasn't fun enough, there's something to keep an eye on. I'm rooting straight up against the Broncos to sign Ryan Fitzpatrick. If that doesn't happen, I'm going to be pretty happy with how this plays out. On the other side of the AFC West, the Chargers lost Eric Weddle. Beyond that, the Chargers are irrelevant in this conversation. But the Raiders not only signed Sean Smith, as I mentioned earlier, they also signed Bruce Irvin to a four-year deal worth up to $10 million per year from the Seahawks. The Raiders' defense continues to improve. Their offensive line continues to improve. They've got Derek Carr and Amari Cooper. They are building a real team in Oakland. And I'm not willing to say they're the favorite in the AFC West right now. I don't believe that they are. But they will be the sexy pick, and I won't blame anyone for taking it. I'm tempted already. The defense was already very, very good. The defense is getting better and better and better. I should say, at least the defense had very bright sparks, and it just keeps improving. They've had a lot of money to spend, and they're spending it. Derek Carr is a young, cheap quarterback, which is developing. I like Alex Smith, but what you see with teams with young, cheap quarterbacks, the defense gets an absurd amount of money to be able to have spent on it. That's why the Seahawks won with Russell Wilson. He was young and cheap. They spent big money on the defense. They won championships. The Broncos just did that with a very expensive quarterback who stunk. So that is, it's not a one-size-fits-all formula here. And the Chiefs are trying to do it with an expensive quarterback by having cheap corners. And we'll see if that turns out. With Marcus Peters, it looks like it will. The advantage of young, cheap players, Amari Cooper also. If they're paying, look at the Detroit Lions, what happened to the Lions. By the way, Calvin Johnson retired. Just as a side note, look at what they were paying Calvin Johnson and Matt Stafford. If you take Calvin Johnson and Matt Stafford and how good they were in their contracts and put it up against Derek Carr and Amari Cooper right now, every single NFL GM on the face of the planet, everyone who's ever been involved with football, would rather have Derek Carr and Amari Cooper and their current contracts because of how much money there is to spend on other pieces of your team that need it. That's what the Raiders are doing, and that's why the Raiders are scary to me. Not because Derek Carr is perfect yet, but he's very good, and he's getting better. And he is so cheap that the rest of this team can be expensive, and it's worth it, and it balances out for the Raiders. So I have a healthy fear of Oakland for the first time in a very long time, and that's exactly why. if you've listened to the show this far into it here in the 40th minute or so, I like to think that you're enjoying it, or you're at least tolerating it enough. And whenever I enjoy and or tolerate something, I like to know how I can help support it. And I believe that a lot of you do, because a lot of you have, and I appreciate that so very much. So for this next minute, I'm going to tell you some different ways you can help support this show, help keep it rolling through the off season, and how you can help keep supporting whatever it is that I'm doing. The easiest way, the most straightforward way, I suppose, is with cold hard cash. There's eventually a point in your life whenever you hit a birthday when you stop asking for toys and start asking for money. And that's how the show is right now. This show just turned 16. On Patreon.com, patreon.com/RTK, you can pledge a little bit of money each month that will just roll in automatically from you to me. And I'll give you a shout out on this show, as I'm about to do with all these people coming up here in a second. That way you can help financially support the show, which I think, as I say every week, is how I got this much more beautiful sounding microphone that I was using previously, which not only sounds better, but makes my recording experience much, much easier. I used to have to take my handheld mic and wrap it over my laptop screen and then over and then under another edge and then have it propped up on the plug because it would shorten the plug usually on a thing of chapstick. Which, not to complain, not just how it was. And now I can plug and go, and I think it sounds better also. The only reason I can do that is because of you guys funding the show through Patreon. Again, it's patreon.com/RTK. People who have done that, the $20 group, Don Beal, at DonBeal32 on Twitter, Andy Simpson, Steven Smith, and Derek Vaughn, at D_Vaughn88. $10 group, Christine Roadlander, at C. Roadlander, and Ty Declare, at Ty Declare 44, have been here since the beginning. $5 group, Josh Beadle, Ben Rahman, Jason Essler. If any of you are in that group and I did not see your Twitter handle, just send it to me and I'd love to add it to my notes and be able to shout you out with your Twitter handle every week if you're in the $10 group or $20 group. If you want to sponsor the show and advertise a product, you can get in contact with me either on Twitter at JB Briscoe or on Facebook, facebook.com/RTK show. And those are great ways to interact with the show. You can send messages. And in fact, I just responded to a message from Corey Thiel on Facebook, who I also interact with on Twitter a lot. It's a great way to be able to hear ideas that you have for the show going forward. One of the things I'm working on right now is figuring out how I can have guests on the show more easily. People from Arrowhead Addict, people from other teams, people talking about the draft who know more and have different perspectives than I do. And the way that I'm being able to do that is because you guys on Patreon are funding the show with your money. Other ways to help support, following those accounts and giving me input that way is legitimately truly important. And then being able to share the show on your own Facebook, on your own Twitter, subscribing to the show on iTunes so you get every episode as soon as it comes out is a fantastic convenience for you, and it makes it easier for me to track exactly who's listening. Not like I know your name when you subscribe, but it makes me see who is the amount of people subscribing. That's a little bit easier of a number for me to track than people who are listening through Arrowhead Addict on the website. Also, though, commenting on Arrowhead Addict is a great way for you all to have conversations together, and then I can jump in and join in whenever I see something pop up there. I love the comment sections on Arrowhead Addict on these shows. It's always interesting. And also, again, telling your friends and letting people know that this is a show that exists, and if they're a Chiefs fan, they might like to hear it. Spreading the word by mouth is a fantastic medium as well. I think I said I was going to spend a minute talking about that. It was probably more like 3 minutes, and for that, I apologize. Now to two last stories about the Kansas City Chiefs before we wrap this show up. One is the Eagles, and you know this already, but the Eagles and Chase Daniel agreed in principle to a multi-year deal pretty early on in the process. He is now officially a Philadelphia Eagle. He will compete with Sam Bradford for the starting job. Where this gets really relevant for the Chiefs is if he plays a lot, It will improve the Chiefs' compensatory pick next year. The Chiefs got no picks this year. And currently, Sean Smith and Mitchell Schwartz will probably basically even out. Jeff Allen might bring something in for the Chiefs. The way compensatory picks are very... it's very hard to project them, especially now. But if Chase Daniel gets some playing time, that would be good for the Chiefs' compensatory pick selection next year. Another interesting thing that comes with this is the quarterback discussion. It's always fun to talk about quarterbacks. We all saw Chase Daniel leaving. That was easy. Tyler Bray has been on this roster for a long time. It feels like it's been like about 10 years. I think it's actually been like 3. But he's never really been an active roster member. He's always been injured or kind of snuck on to an IR type of list. But it seems like the Chiefs have been willing not only to give him a contract extension, which happened, but always been willing to try to hide him away somewhere on the roster where they think he's got the physical tools, where he might be able to develop into something larger. I think that's very interesting. Also, Aaron Murray, who was an actual draft pick. Bray was undrafted. Aaron Murray, an actual draft pick, who I think is just built to be a backup quarterback for his entire life. I don't ever see him starting. Tyler Bray, I think, has even a less chance of actually starting, but I think he's a more explosive quarterback at this point. I don't know that much about either of them. We haven't seen either of them play a meaningful snap in the NFL ever. So that's totally speculation, but I think we can judge where they are. We can try to gauge that based off how the Chiefs interact with them. To that point, Robert Griffin III is a free agent. Do not talk to me about Johnny Manziel. He's not coming. And we don't want him to. Trust me, please. But RG3 makes a lot of sense with Andy Reid. If RG3 could step in and be the quiet, unassuming backup behind Alex Smith, and by the way, I think he could. He didn't cause any trouble with Washington whenever Kirk Cousins really took over. RG3 was not a circus. He was a model citizen. And if he can come in and learn under Andy Reid and try to get a grasp of his system as well as he can, an entire year of not being expected to play, no expectations, just sit there, sign a 2-year deal or whatever it is, and then maybe in 2017 get the chance to prove himself if Alex Smith moves on from here, I would not have a problem with that whatsoever. I think when that happens, obviously you're closing the book on Aaron Murray or Tyler Bray, which I kind of want to see just because I don't know who the Chiefs like more, which is surprising considering that Murray was a draft pick, but Bray always seems to, and Murray's been on the active roster, or at least the third quarterback, a lot. And Bray has never seen anything, but it seems like there's something that the Chiefs really like about Tyler Bray enough to continually try to build him up. And I'm wondering if that's failing or if that's succeeding, and we're not going to know until the Chiefs really test themselves at quarterback. And you know, we're going to get a chance to see one of those guys become the everyday backup, and one of them become the everyday clipboard, inactive clipboard, third quarterback guy on the sidelines, unless they bring in someone else. And if they bring in someone else and one of those guys doesn't make the team again, it's over then for either of those guys. Chase Daniel leaving, though, not a surprise. That felt very long-winded to talk about quarterbacks that probably won't see the field, and for that I apologize. Last point, the Browns officially terminated the contract of wide receiver Dwayne Bowe. All right, listen. I'm going to say this. I'm going to admit my bias. I was a huge fan of Dwayne Bowe early on in his Chiefs career. I think we all were. And in 2007, when he was drafted, was the first year that I had kind of like decided before the draft that I was really going to focus in on the Chiefs as however old I would have been then, 13 or 14. Really gonna zoom in on the Chiefs in 2007. And so I have stuck up for Dwayne Bowe probably more than I should have, which is contradicting the thing I said at the beginning of the show. I understand. I'm a little bit biased towards Dwayne Bowe. But he's now worked with Andy Reid. He's been a part of Andy Reid's system. He's a veteran presence. He might be slow, and I don't know if he can catch, and I don't know if he wants to play football anymore. But if the Chiefs can figure out that he does want to play football, if they have any faith in his physical abilities whatsoever, and Bowe would be down to sign a Rod Streeter-esque contract with high incentives and a low guaranteed number, I'd be totally okay with the Chiefs bringing Dwayne Bowe back. But I understand if you're not, and I would pull my hat back out of that ring in a second if Dwayne Bowe doesn't think he wants to play football anymore, or if he seems fat and uninterested. But if the contract is good enough, I'd be willing to risk that, maybe risk $100,000, and just kick the tires on Dwayne Bowe. That's so tempting to me. And it's because the Chiefs need another veteran wide receiver presence. And I entertained Riley Cooper for 30 seconds because of, it's a free agent wide receiver with experience in the league who worked with Andy Reid. Maybe, no. Okay, great. Moved on from Riley Cooper. And with Dwayne Bowe, he knows the offense. He knows Alex Smith. He knows Andy Reid. He knows Kansas City. I'm just a little bit tempted. Anyway, that's going to do it on this episode of Roughing the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, forever and always trying to convince myself that Dwayne Bowe is still relevant. As always, thank you for not only supporting the show with Patreon, for sharing it with your friends, for subscribing on iTunes, for reviewing it on iTunes, for whatever it is that you may do. Thank you simply for listening to the show. Knowing that you're listening makes this show worth talking through. I have fun. I hope you enjoy listening to it. To that end, I'm Joshua Briscoe. You can always contact me at JBBriscoe on Twitter, Facebook.com/RTK Show. Tell me what you want more of, less of during this offseason. The offseason is a different animal. Probably have more tangents, less news, and certainly less games, and I'm going to need your help and your questions to get through that. If you have any questions you want, any topics you want to bring up, send them to me so I can make a podcast. As always, thanks for listening, and bye, Mom!
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?